is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, that's how you're going to start, huh?
Well, it's just the wrong time of day. I'm off my routine. I have a whole day behind me. And it's for listeners. We're taping at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which is unusual for us. Usually it's a race to take a shower and get a bagel down my gullet before we start talking at 10 in the morning. I feel subdued. Like I want to be on the back porch with a glass of wine.
It's very odd to see you with dry hair.
That is true. That is true. My hair is dry. It's very strange. I like your shirt.
Rocking the Florida Spectacular t-shirt.
Yes, for those of you playing the home game who cannot see Rick Kilby, he is wearing my book t-shirt. Anyway, we are taping at an unusual time of day because we have kind of unusual guests. I just wanted to check in because I'm gonna miss seeing you tomorrow. I'm used to my Wednesdays.
Strange.
Yeah. What am I gonna do from 10 to 11 on Wednesday morning?
You know, it's so weird because we recorded last week, but it's one of those weeks that has passed that has seemed like a month. Like so much has happened in the last week. So it's kind of weird how time expands and contracts when you're busy doing Florida stuff.
What have you been busy doing?
I had a thing in Sanford, perhaps a future guest on our podcast, a speaker who was the curator of the Circus Museum in Sarasota.
Oh, yeah.
I saw her do a talk, and she was outstanding. I'm very excited about having her on as a guest. So I drove up to Sanford again. I love that place. There was a big art show in Winter Park, and our friend Victor had a booth there. So I went Saturday and Sunday. And then yesterday was an extremely long day. My wife got a new knee put in. So now she's bionic.
Awesome. Do they let you keep the old parts when they do that? Or
thank God, no. Unless, you know, they could make them taxidermy, which is an interesting idea.
It could go in your office.
It could.
When I was in my 20s, I had to have my spleen removed, and I asked if I could keep it, and they were like, they looked at me like I was some kind of weirdo, and I'm like, well, I'm paying for it. I mean, I want to see what it looks like. How many chances do you get to see a human spleen?
I think that's the perfect segue for our guests.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know how they would not want to enter the podcast with that. This week's guests are three and many magical things happen in literature with three. They are with USF Saw Palmetto or Saw Palm. I always call it Saw Palmetto. But the guests are Zoe Spanbrook, Ben Sperduto, and Ariana Matondo. And they are all part of the Saw Palm Literary Magazine at USF. Welcome. Thank you three.
Thank you for having us.
You're so happy.
Surrounded by books.
It's a facade, I promise you. We're tired grad students.
I remember being a tired grad student. I can tell you everything I read in grad school that somewhat interested me, I had to make a note and go back and read it later when I could actually retain it for more than 6 days.
Because there's reading and there's graduate school reading.
Yeah. Graduate school reading. I tell people my first book, Backroads of Paradise, came about because I was a graduate assistant in the Florida Studies program at USF, and I was making copies of it because it's out of print. And the joke is when you give people 5,000 pages of reading a week about Florida, you eventually run out of things that are in print. So they had to make me make copies of things that were out of print. And I became absolutely fascinated with the book, and it led to my own book. So sometimes that reading has a good purpose. You could be a published writer. Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal. Yeah.
Right.
For all of us.
So what is your graduate program? I assume you're all in the same program.
Yes, we are part of the MFA program in the English department. So we're all creative writing students. Zoe and I specialize in poetry, whereas Ben specializes in fiction.
So MFA is what they call a terminal degree.
Yes.
And I love that saying because it sounds so dark.
It does. It sounds like we're going to die. And
I mean, we are all going to die.
You're not wrong. You're not incorrect.
I bet you didn't know that I had a former girlfriend who had an MFA in poetry.
Oh.
What school did she get it from, if you don't mind me asking?
Georgia State. She called it the Concrete Campus in Atlanta.
Spoken like an academic. What school did she get it from?
Went to Georgia State.
To what?
My fiance went to Georgia State.
Oh, well, maybe you're maybe that's my old girlfriend.
I mean, I don't have a good track record as a creative in any relationship with another creative, so I can't say I'm shocked that it's your ex-girlfriend, Rick, because you are a highly creative individual, and Julie is a very grounded woman, and that seems to be Barry is also a very grounded man. And that seems to be, you know, the relationship always needs somebody who reminds the other one, you cannot survive on tea and mozzarella sticks. You need to eat. When's the last time you showered? And
that's funny because as grad students, I don't think we know the answer to those questions ourselves.
It doesn't get better. So you all are going to be professional writers.
Yes, that is the goal.
All right.
Editors.
Yeah, possibly yeah. editors. Yeah.
You don't want to be an editor. Trust me, it's horrible.
That's actually funny. So not to bring it to Saul Palm, but I'm going to bring it to Saul Palm.
Well, it is what we're here for. So
that is true. But Saul Palm is run by second year MFA students. Our program is 3 years long. So every year, the second years will be running the magazine with the department head, Dr. John Fleming. And we also have to take a concurrent class with it called Saw Palm. And during that class, every week they bring editors from huge literary magazines or publishers or publicity people. And it's sometimes very bleak because you ask them, like the literary magazine editors, like, how are you affording like life, you know, right now? And they're like, I'm not. You know,
but it's for the love of the craft.
It's for the love of the craft. But most of them usually have like a second job or, you know, they write or they teach or something like that.
So John is, I'm sorry, I know you want to talk about editors, but I have nothing to add to that other than, yes, they have a second job. And I one of my contract gigs is as a copy editor, and I've worked as a newspaper editor, and I have a very dear friend who I believe worked on Saw Palm when she was an English major. I think she was part of it. She is a very gifted, gifted editor. And I don't want to work with writers that much, would be my answer. Because writers, I'm a writer and I know how I am. Mm-hmm. And I try and be low maintenance, but I'm still not. I actually gave a talk last weekend. Was I in Orlando last weekend, Rick? Was that last month? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those time things. It was week before last. Yeah.
Yeah. I gave a talk, how to make money as a writer without an OnlyFans account, because there are a lot of people out there who want to be writers who don't understand what you have to do to be a writer. And it's gritty. It's a lot. Editing is a little bit more of a reliable path to go. But you still have to deal with writers. Present company excluded, Rick and I are delights. but it's you know, I'm glad that they have those people. I know this is not about Florida and we're getting there, I promise, but I want to say this. I'm glad they have those people come out to you, because the one thing they do not teach people who want to be writers in college at all is how to get work, bill for work, run a business, because you are your own business. I mean, people who actually succeed as a writer are caught completely off guard when they realize, crap, I have to pay taxes or all this stuff. Because I think they think most people are not going to be writers or most people aren't going to succeed. But I kind of wish there had been a class somewhere in college, like practical business skills for artists or creatives or something like that. Because it's like they get you to, you are a knitter of nouns, you polish every adjective, you remove the unnecessary adverbs, you kill your darlings, you do all the things, and then you're out there and you're like, what the shit's a 941? What do I have to do with that? And that, by the way, is a tax form that when you are self-employed, you have to submit quarterly. So it's kind of a disconnect. So I hope that they're giving you some of that grittiness there. And if not, I hope you find a very wealthy benefactor who is also a CPA.
Absolutely. Like, we learned recently that when you get an advancement from a publisher, there's a huge, significant tax cut to those advances, like stuff like that, that we had no idea about. I know another thing about our cohort is like the social media stuff that all the editors, like the guest editors, keep telling us. It's like, you need to have a Substack, you need to have a TikTok, you know, to get more exposure, that kind of stuff.
Can I just sell my underwear?
It's like, literally what Zoe says all the time. Every week we just look at each other and we're like, this is bleak, man. Like, I don't want to post on Instagram. I don't want to do a TikTok dance, but
yeah, writing a TikTok. I just don't see it.
It's called Book Talk.
It's really exclusive. Sometimes.
Book Talk, yep.
Oh. I used to work as a copywriter. So I'm a marketing copywriter. And yeah, I can definitely agree with like the when tax time comes around. Anytime I was doing freelance stuff, it's like, oh, right, all that money that I was supposed to be putting aside over the course of the year that I can put towards the IRS bill that's coming my way.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. I just wish they did a better job, but I don't I don't know why they don't. But all that aside, part of this wonderful journey that people go on to become writers, poets and authors and all these things ends up in creating SawPalm, which, as you mentioned, John Fleming, who I kind of got excited about, John Fleming is your faculty advisor. John Fleming was an early, early guest on this podcast. And he was great. I have a deck of his playing cards. Did you know he created playing cards?
No, we did not.
Okay. So John Fleming wrote a great book about Florida cryptids that are not real. I mean, not at all. And I think it's called Fearsome Creatures. Is that the name of it? I'm looking, I'm Googling. I should have prepped for this. Fearsome Creatures of Florida. So it was The Ghost of the Monkey Knot. it was really this great book. And if you bought it, I think on Kindle, there were some animations. But then he sent me, he was very sweet, he had a deck of playing cards made up with all the creatures from the Fearsome Creatures of Florida.
That is fascinating.
Yes. He of course talks about the skunk apes. He talks about peat fairies. I have learned the hard way that when an academic is excited about a book, I don't always need to be that excited about it. I've kind of learned, you're laughing, Rick, you know exactly what I mean. Like I've kind of learned to wait it out before I get too excited. But his book, Fearsome Creatures, was absolutely delightful. I would wholeheartedly recommend that to anybody. And I think a portion of the proceeds from the sales goes to the Nature Conservancy. I think he should sell the playing cards, but I see money
we'll
everywhere.
We'll bring this up to him for sure.
We're definitely at least going to ask to see these playing cards.
Definitely.
For
sure.
They're fantastic. And if he has any for sale, please let him know. We'd like to buy a few and send them to some of our top tier listeners because they're really great. Anyway, so he's your advisor. And what is SawPalm? Now that we're like 40 minutes in, what is SawPalm?
Who wants to take that one?
So SawPalm got started back in 2005. I think it's been that. Yeah. Because we're coming up on our 20th anniversary issue. So SawPalm focuses mainly on kind of highlighting everything that is great, wonderful, and interesting about Florida beyond sort of tourist brochures and Florida man memes. So sometimes it's a themed issue. Sometimes not. We're not having a theme coming up this time around because it's the 20th anniversary issue.
Well, that's kind of the theme.
Yeah, that was what we decided. So we always include fiction, nonfiction, poetry, as well as art and photography. Yeah. And we try to work in some comics as well, if we can.
And are these all students who submit, or who can submit? Because I thought it was all students, but then I think I'm wrong.
No, it's actually mostly just outside writers. We actually don't have any submissions from anyone at USF.
Yeah, it's like a strict rule.
Yeah, we have kind of a firewall there to avoid any kind of accusations of nepotism.
Right. So there's a 5-year rule. So you have to have graduated at least 5 years and been away from the institution before you can start submitting to SAWPALM.
And what do you look for in types of content? Are you looking for literary work or introductions to cozy novellas?
This is kind of the fun thing about having the editorial staff change over every year, is that it's always kind of something new. Mm-hmm. So every group that's going to come in is going to have sort of its own priorities, some things it's looking for. Last year, the theme was, I have a copy of it.
Yes.
Last year, the theme was
beautiful.
Strange. So it was kind of like weird stories and kind of quirky sort of stuff. So when we come into the class, we divide everyone up into different genre editorial groups. So being the fiction, I'm with two other fiction writers, and we're just kind of looking at everything that comes in. And
Ben is also the managing editor, so he runs all of us this year. You forgot to mention.
Yeah, I'm the one that's burying them with, it's like, oh, we need people to look at this. If we need to look at this. And I need to know which poems out of this batch need to go in there, which is what they're supposed to be doing right now. But they'll get back to that later.
Harsh taskmaster, yeah, like, Ben. Wow.
If just looking at the fiction submissions, for instance, the two other fiction writers and I have, we all kind of have a different sensibility, but everything that we get has to go through at least two readers. Mm-hmm. So two people have to agree that something is good before we'll move on and put it on the list of potentials for publication.
Yeah,
great.
So, I got a question,
please.
Because the visual side, I'm looking at the website now, which is great, and there's an art and photography gallery. And guess what I found, Kathy?
What?
Art made out of taxidermy.
Isn't that the best?
There's a piece called Hurricane Signal by Robert Victor, Volume 5, with stuffed bass, and it looks like a gar or a pike, and it's such a cool piece. So how do you get the submissions for the artwork? That's what I want to know. Like, do you just put out a call and people submit stuff? Is that how it works?
So the great thing about having a literary magazine that's been existing for 20 years is that we have built up a following through across our social medias. And do we have a newsletter? Am I right or wrong about that? Do we send things out? Like,
managing editor should know the answer to this. I don't believe so.
Okay, never mind. But yes, we do primarily make a call out on social media. Our social media editors, they're not here, but they make a graphic. And then we also use Submittable. Have you guys heard of that platform? It's like a place where you can, it's like a what is it? Like,
I would say it's like an standardized format,
yeah,
in which different literary journals, magazines put out calls for things that they want you to submit to. It's free to sign up,
yeah,
but different magazines have different requirements for submission fees sometimes.
Right. Yeah, sometimes it costs like $20 to submit to like a really high up prestigious literary journal. Ours is free.
Yeah.
And we actually recently extended the deadline. It was previously, we had it until October 7th, but the editors felt like we weren't really satisfied with the submissions that we were getting, so we extended it until the 15th. So it ends tomorrow.
But yeah, you can find us on Submittable and social media online. Yeah, we publish one issue per year. The submission period is typically July 1st through October 1st, but as Ariana said, we extended it a bit.
Yeah.
I noticed on Facebook you haven't posted since 2021.
The Facebook has kind of fallen by the wayside.
Facebook is for old people now, as I understand it.
Yeah, we do have some more recent stuff on Instagram.
Okay,
and we talked about potentially doing Blue Sky or something on Substack as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we may have to leave that for the next batch of
the next staff. Yeah.
So I noticed in some of this art you have Theo, and I can never pronounce his name right, Theo Wuchek's art, but he's been dead for quite a while.
Yes.
So how did you get that?
Yeah, we've had some art that's come through over the years. I don't think we're going to have any this year, but somewhere we've had, you know, it'll either be, we'll like kind of contact someone that has either like work that's in the public domain or work from an artist with a lot of ties to Florida and kind of get in touch with whoever would be kind of like, you know, the legal custodian of the rights for that work. And then just get, ask for the permission to use it. And I can't speak for previous staffs. I would, I don't know if they would, if they'd done any kind of like fees for any of that kind of stuff. I would imagine not. But yeah, I'm not sure there.
Dang it. Last issue or number 19 was Florida Strange. That would have been so much fun.
We've had a lot of really cool themes. We've done Florida Noir. What were some of the other ones that we've
done? There's a dedicated postcard issue.
Postcard issue.
That one was cool.
And of course, we have our Places to Stand, which is kind of its own thing where we can accept submissions from anywhere about a place, anywhere in Florida. It can be any type of form, but we just ask that it's like small, like a micro form. So poetry, nonfiction, fiction, any of those.
Yeah, there's actually like a Google Map integration on the website where you'll go to the Places to Stand and you'll, I say Google Map, it might not be Google. I'm not sure who it is. It's probably Google.
Yeah.
It's not Google. It's owned by Google, or they're using in the API or something. So you'll go in and just kind of like put a pin on the location where you're at, and then you'll write a story or a piece that's just kind of related to that location.
Yeah. My favorite thing to do on my downtime is like look at the different ones. Like I just click random ones like Hialeah, Miami, Jacksonville, like all these random places, and there's lots of really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Also, not to bring it back to the themes, but for the digital postcards one that we did, Judy Bloom actually wrote one of them, which is really cool. We have a lot of really cool previous contributors to the magazine.
Yeah, Judy Bloom has her bookstore down in Miami at Books and Books.
Yeah.
So she runs it as a nonprofit, which is really pretty cool if you think about it, because books are not a profitable industry.
No. Yeah, you guys didn't start this to get rich, I hope.
They're doing it because it's a compulsion, like any good writer is.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the Places to Stand, is that curated as well? I mean, can anybody write something or do you have to go through the process? Yeah. Oh, cool.
For Places to Stand, we accept submissions for those as well as interviews and reviews as well, like for books and things like that year round. So you don't have to wait for the submission period if you're interested in, specifying a place to stand and wanting to add that to our collection. Yeah.
But they still do get looked at. They go through a review. They may not know this yet. We haven't gone through them yet. So they're going to get bombarded with a bunch of them here in about a month. But they can worry about that later.
That's a very, very cool resource. Yeah. It's lacking.
We just kind of want to look at it to make sure it's like,
you want to keep
the not going to be like going to the misconnections on Craigslist or something.
I mean, it's high quality. I mean, for it's everything. Cool.
There is.
No, I like it because it's a good way. No, please do not try and hook up with anybody from Saw Palm. That's the episode disclaimer. But I do like that it is kind of a literary map to the state, because a lot of these, the Places to Stand captured my attention as soon as you reached out to us, because the descriptions are not merely, here's where I got gas. It was cheap. They had the good ruffles. Some of them are just narrative descriptions. I think there's a few poems in there. There's definitely, it's a better look at the state. And I really like that, because I think we need as many eyes looking at the state as critically and artistically as we can. So
that's actually why we were chosen. No, I chose them for this podcast, because we are all Florida natives, whereas some people from our cohort just came in for the program. So they're from out of state, but we have like a personal attachment to this state. And we know that, yes, there are some very valid reasons to, you know, kind of harp on the state, but also in the same breath, there is so much to love about this place. And what I love about Saw Palm is that we try our hardest to accept submissions that subvert the expectations of what Florida is looked at as, you know, by the rest of the country.
Yeah.
So
even by its own residents, it's easy to make generalizations. But yeah, there's so much beauty. And like even listening to other episodes of the podcast, just exploring the landscapes and the richness of the earth itself. And I feel like the literary tradition of not only this magazine, but other, you know, writers and institutions in Florida, like, puts a nice, like, layer over that landscape as well through which to see it. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's nice to have the podcast. I wrote the book, started the podcast because I got tired of Florida being the popular dog to kick, which is why I was really happy to see. No, it is. I mean, it really
started, it's true. It's so true.
It started with the 2000 elections, right? With the hanging chads. Yeah. Then the 9/11 hijackers were trained here. I mean, it just keeps going. I mean,
I think it's the Florida man thing that
well, that's where it
I think that really set it off for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, so I'm curious to know where the three of y'all, where y'all from, are you different parts of the state?
Yeah. Well, I am from Boca Raton, Florida on the East Coast, bougie Boca. And, spent most of my life in Palm Beach County, but I also went to FGCU for undergrad in Fort Myers. So I spent a little time on the East Coast and West Coast and, you know, the sunrise and sunset of it all.
Cool.
For me, from ages 1 to 10, I was born in Los Angeles, but I grew up in Gainesville, Florida.
Woohoo!
Yes, love Gainesville. And then for middle school, I moved to Tampa. And so I've been in Tampa ever since.
Tampa's... Tampa's changed a lot.
It has. Actually, I just did research. I just came back from the archives in the USF library because I went to Blake High School. I was a creative writing student there.
You must have been like in their arts, right?
I've been in this road for a long time. It really is a compulsion, like you said. But I watched that entire scene change because it used to be a traditional and a magnet school. But slowly through the years, from 2014 to 2018, they've been pushing out traditional students. So the Section 8 housing that was right near the neighborhood completely got demolished. Mm. And then like they were planning to build like a Starbucks and all these other things. And so I was in the archives, like trying to find newspaper clippings about it, like anything that I could find for a research project I'm working on. But yeah, I've definitely seen a lot of things change in this city, some for the better, some for the worse. Like I saw Armature Works pop up out of nowhere, all these random things.
No, Tampa, I live in Gulfport, which is west of everything else in Pinellas County and is other than our barrier islands. And we have a podcast guest coming on in a couple of weeks, Gilbert King. He has a new book out called Bone Valley, and he sent me an invitation to his private book launch, which was in Tampa. And I really mulled it over and I finally just had, and it broke my heart, but I know me. I said, Gilbert, I would love to catch up with you and get coffee. I want to be the person who will drive to Tampa at 4 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon. But I don't want to tell you I'm going to be there and not show up. I mean, there's a real hostility, and we could do a podcast about this at some point, Rick. The Pinellas versus Tampa people, because I live in Pinellas County and I firmly assert that for somebody who lives, especially in South Pinellas, the idea of going to Tampa is how New Yorkers feel about going to New Jersey. Yeah. It is just, you don't want to do it.
That's an appropriate analogy.
Yeah, sorry. But there's
no, keep it real.
I worked in Tampa. I worked in Ybor. I worked in a great old cigar factory that turned into a newspaper office. And it was beautiful. It was wonderful. It was haunting. And Ybor, the history there is just, it oozes history. Yeah. And it's just such this great place. But if you try and get me to go there now, I'm like, it's 5:30. No, it's not happening.
I think a lot of that is age. You know, it's like, I can't think of the last time I went to Pinellas or Hillsborough County because, you know, the obstacle to getting there is I-4 and going through that Disney mess. Someone, but we didn't hear about from
no we didn't,
ben
we didn't
from.
Hear from Ben yes. I'm sorry
Ben, go ahead and tell us.
So that was a good lead up because Ariane has actually misled you. I am actually not a Florida native.
Lies on the podcast.
But
two of you were not born here
for most of my life. I moved here in 2000.
You get honorary status
25 years. That's good enough.
It's been quite a while. I was originally from Ohio. My parents were from up there, but they had actually met and married in Sarasota back in the 70s. And then they decided to move back here because they got tired of shoveling the snow and all of that. And we lived in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, it was just kind of boring. So yeah, I've been in Tampa kind of ever since then. And yeah, I can definitely relate to seeing everything just completely transform. I actually live over in Ybor City. So like just especially that area is interesting seeing how it's changed. And it's funny. I kind of love that there's like this lingering sense of kind of like dangerousness that Ybor still kind of has in people's minds, mm-hmm. where like you'll hear people say it's like, oh, I can't go over to Ybor. Something might happen. And it's like
shooting
you're
last year, right? Or mm-hmm. a few years ago that really set off.
I mean, it was at like 3 a.m.
That's true. It's the nightlife.
Nothing good ever happens at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
But also nothing good happens after 2 a.m.
They have the castle, which is like a goth, like queer adjacent club that is very popular. They have like, there was a spookiezy. Yes, there was a spookiezy. I think that spookiezy shut down recently.
Or they changed locations.
Yeah, the best food ever is in Ybor City. That's the other thing. Cuban food, the Columbia restaurant, mm-hmm. the bakeries. It's a great place.
Bob, Kathy. Kathy obviously does not like the Columbia. She made a face. It's the oldest restaurant in the state. How can 19 you not love it?
I.
Well, what are you ordering there?
There goes another sponsor.
There goes another sponsor. They are. So in my defense, growing up in Clearwater, Florida, my best friend was Cuban, born in Cuba, Cuban. And after you eat that Cuban food and their yuca and their roast pork, there's just nothing that's going to come close to it. Mm-hmm. I think there is also some really good Cuban food in Ybor. We can agree on that. We might disagree on the
recommendations for us then.
It's been a while since I've been there. But I just, over on my side, I could tell you, but I just, Ybor's changed so much. I don't even think I knew the names of some of the places. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, honestly,
there's constantly stuff coming in, coming out.
Yeah. So,
I started going over there, I think in the 90s, and it was like thrift stores and, you know, there were signs for places that devil crab and all this kind of stuff.
Devil crab.
And then it got, you know, the chains moved in kind of. And so, yeah, but I haven't been in decades probably.
Yeah. When they tried to build out Centro Ybor and they put the movie theater there, like all that stuff is still there, but like the movie theater's closed. There's like a co-working space in there now or something.
Oh, I saw that. But the castle, that one has been around since the early 2000s.
Kind of the castle. I think the castle's been there a little longer than that.
Yeah. And then also, have you heard of the Crest building at all?
The Crest is the old department store. I know there's different ones in different cities. We have a Crest department store in downtown Orlando. The building's still there.
The one I'm talking about in Ybor is like almost like a gallery. And
you're
talking
about the Crest Contemporary. Where
that sounds cool.
And it's right next door to the photography museum.
Yes. So there's like sometimes galleries, there's poetry readings. I've even seen dance recitals there.
They used to have a micro cinema up in behind the gallery space where you could go watch movie screenings and, you know, eat popcorn. It was great.
We're going to need links, y'all.
We're going to need a lot of links for our listeners. The best part of Ybor when I work there is the part of Ybor that is technically Cuba. So, there's a site of the boarding house Jose Marti used to stay in. He helped plan the Cuban Revolution, which you might argue it didn't work out as well as everybody had hoped, but
John is actually here. He just walked past us. We're going to invite him in.
We're going to explode with six people on the podcast.
She told us about your
six
playing people. Cards.
Yeah.
Hey, John.
How's it going?
It's going great. We were just talking about Cuba and Ybor, how there's a little piece of Ybor, Jose Marti Park, that is technically Cuba. I used when I worked across the street, I would, when my dog had to go out, I'd be like, all right, Calypso, let's go to Cuba. And we'd go across the street and she'd pee on Cuban soil. It was delightful. So it's culture. So John Fleming has just joined the podcast. I guess he's the adult in the room now.
I guess so.
Maybe we should go back to talking about Saw Palm.
We should probably go back. We just got sidetracked because it's all fascinating. That's the point of Saw Palm. Just like our conversation about Florida, we go on to all these fascinating things, and what is or is not good Cuban food is clearly up for debate. But it's the thing. What goes into Saw Palm is like all the good things about Florida, the good writing. That's the plan, at least, right? You don't look for bad writing, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
We avoid that, the bad writing. We get good stuff. I mean, they can tell you they're reading things for this issue, and we've almost finalized our acceptances. And we're always surprised at the number of good writers around the state, most of which we've never heard of before. But, you know, they send us their best stuff, and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. How many submissions would you say you get in a year?
We got.
Or how many did you get this year so far?
We got a little over 200 this year, and that's for submission periods open for what, about 4 months, I think.
So how do people find out about you? Other than through this podcast, of course.
There's a lot of people found it through Submittable, because a lot of authors use Submittable, and we'll get updates from there. We've had the Instagram, had a few on there. Yeah. And then just kind of spread the word, like people have been in there before. I think we have a listing on, there's a couple of websites like Colds or Chill Subs.
Yeah, Duotrope.
Duotrope, yeah. A few others that maintain like an active listing of places that are accepting submissions. So pretty much it's just like the resource for every author that's when they're looking for a place to place their piece, they'll go on there and start looking at everything.
Yeah.
There's a lot of word of mouth, you know, at the beginning of the journal, we really had to, pull some strings to get people to send us their work because they didn't know anything about the journal. But now all the smart writers know that if you're going to be a Florida writer, you have to be published. And you're not really a Florida writer until you've been published in South
Carolina. I am not really a Florida writer.
Yeah, so, we're not there yet.
We're
maybe
not
someday.
We're not there yet. This is horrible.
Hey, submissions don't close until tomorrow.
Better get writing.
No, if I write something now, somebody's going to have to edit it. And nobody wants that. So while it is a USF publication, it is not open to USF students. So it's basically a really good compendium of Florida writers and Florida photographers and Florida artists. It's like Creative Florida at its best, is what I'm getting from this. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
So, and how much is it for people to buy it?
It's $10. Wait, is that right?
Yeah, $10 bucks for a year.
I'm the one that ends up processing all the orders that come through and mailing them out. So I had to think for a sec. It's like, wait, is that? Yeah, it's just $10 for a, we call it a 1 year subscription, but it's an annual issue. So,
yeah.
For a while there, we were, our public service is that we were selling copies of SAWPALM for less than it costs to produce it. But we just raised our price from $8 to $10. Mm-hmm. So now it's about the cost of producing it. It's not a profit deal.
Never.
That falls in line with every other creative project I've ever been a part of. So that hangs together really well. What I can offer to do, though, is we will provide one to everybody who supports the podcast at the $10 level or above. So this would be the point in the podcast where I encourage people to subscribe to the Florida Spectacular. And if you subscribe at our top tier level, which is $10 a month, then that is what we call our Orange Blossom Special membership. Then we will include an issue of SAWPALM. That way you support us, we support the Florida arts, and hopefully there will be a lot more creativity coming forth from Florida to give people a little bit of hope in this, dare I say, almost dystopian hellscape of a reality that we're currently finding a lot of creative inspiration with.
I have a hack too. The first 7 issues are on the website as PDFs.
Okay, so, Rick. You can,
you're talking 2013 and earlier.
Yeah,
so,
I'm going to give them the 2025.
Yeah, the fresh new one. The cover art is just gorgeous. I mean, you guys, whoever makes those editorial decisions about what to put on the front has done a great job. What's the size of the publication? It's like a tiny little thing, right?
Yeah, it's, what is that?
5x7.
Yeah, 5x7.
It's kind of cool, actually. I like it.
Yeah, we like that. It makes, almost pocket size. You can stick it in your back pocket, walk around with SAWPALM.
Yeah, it feels collectible. Now, it feels special.
What do the contributors get? $5,000, $10,000 each? What do they want?
Yeah, we aim for that, but we usually fall short.
By about $5,000 or $10,000?
Two. free copies.
And a reading that we provide for them.
So how many people make it into the issue? You said over 200 have submitted pieces for this last issue. How many people make the final cut?
Varies. It kind of goes by category. The page count is usually about 130 pages or so. So kind of however much we can fit into there. And sometimes there will be a lot more of one category than another. I think we were in an editorial meeting earlier today, and I think we're going to have probably about like maybe seven or eight fictions, seven or eight nonfiction.
You can't put a number on the poetry.
And the diligent poetry editorial staff is still going through and making their final selections on how many.
We'll have a list. We'll have a list of yeses, but then there's still new submissions coming in, and some of them are really good. And so we just keep adding on and on and on. But it is common for literary magazines to have a lot of poetry in their magazines. So
yeah, but poems take up so much more space, though, because they don't even use the full page. It's my argument.
Yeah, but they're short. A lot of them are short and just take up a page.
Didn't you ever read the love song of T. Alfred Prufrock? That was not short.
Yeah. But the thing is, we've gotten some really cool contributors who have, at the time they submitted, they were probably like around mid-career or emerging poets who, you know, blew up afterwards. And it was like really cool to say, oh, we have them in a previous issue. Mm-hmm. Like Richard Sykin. Do you know Richard Sykin at all?
We're sorry.
No, it's completely fine.
Not part of our world.
Yeah, he's not Floridian, so that checks out.
Oh, yeah.
I know exactly one Florida poet. So
who is it?
He's the guy who wrote This Is Florida, Because This Is Florida, Carson McGrath, Campbell McGrath.
Billy Collins lives in Winter Park.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't know him. Like, I have no clue what this person looks like. I know I have his book of poetry. I know of a Florida poet.
Gloria Munoz, who is the poet laureate of St. Petersburg.
Okay.
She was a previous editor for Salt Palm.
Served on a board of directors with Gloria. I take that back. I know two Florida poets. We're going to stop now.
Yeah,
please do not let Gloria listen to this. Oh my God, I'm a horrible person. I love Gloria.
You better stop while you're ahead.
Just quiet about it.
They're in the closet.
Yeah,
so to speak.
Closet.
Well, do you know Gianna Russo?
Okay, this is just going to be embarrassing. No.
Oh, well, she's been very active in the literary. Oh, she was the... In Tampa, they don't call it poet laureate. They call it word something. I can't remember. But she was the word something for Tampa. Mm-hmm.
And I just remembered the former mayor of Gulfport was our poet laureate. So apparently poets are everywhere. You're right. Florida poets are everywhere.
Yeah, we have a poet laureate in Orlando, too, although the Florida Doge just went through and said it was a waste of money, but we're going to keep doing it anyways.
You had Susan Lilly was.
And then Sean Welcome after her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wordsmith. Tampa Wordsmith is what they call it.
Oh, interesting.
What about fiction? We have some really cool fiction contributors and previous editors like Alicia Thompson. Do you guys know her at all?
No, but she could be a guest if she's a Floridian.
Yes, she is. She writes romance YA books with Penguin Random House, but they're based in Florida. Like I read Love in the Time of Serial Killers, and it's based in Orlando.
That is right up my alley.
That sounds kind of cool.
So that's YA?
Yeah,
it's not.
Well, I guess.
It's adult romance.
I guess so. Yeah.
Kids today know things we don't know, John. That's it. They're just more mature than we were. Well, we're really looking forward to seeing the next issue come out. When will the next issue, when will the 25 issue, if we order them now, when will they show up in our mailbox? You do mail them, right?
We do.
We do. Okay. It would be, is it around April, usually?
It all depends on when we get it to the printer. So we aim to get it to the printer late this year or beginning of next year. And then, you know, we got to wait for the copies to come in. And so it's anywhere usually from February to April.
So your work will be done very soon. And by the time it comes out, y'all will have forgotten all about it.
Well, ideally it's done by the end of the
semester. No, because I will be wrangling down everyone in the hallways of USF to come help me package up and mail them.
I'm part of the publicity and marketing team, which is why I was the one who reached out to you about this podcast. So I also have to schedule the reading in spring and all of that stuff.
Release party. You always have a release party.
Yeah.
It sounds great. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. And we really appreciate you coming on the podcast and reaching out, because we really like the idea of having people who are from all walks of Florida. I feel like Rick and I trend very much towards the environmental and the bookish.
Yeah.
But that's
bookish meaning nonfiction.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a few fiction authors
on
here.
Yeah.
John, I mean, I assume your book Fearsome Creatures was mostly fiction.
I don't know.
Still waiting to meet a werepanther. But we definitely skew one way. So it's nice to have different aspects of Florida for people who maybe aren't as, I'm going to go with passionate instead of obsessed, as I am with certain aspects of the state. Mm-hmm. And I really would encourage our listeners to go. We'll have the links in the show notes, and definitely check out, sawpalm.org, just to take a look, as Rick mentioned, some of the issues from what you said 2013 on. You can actually look at the PDF of them just to see, and especially with everything literary and artistic feeling a real pinch point right now in Florida, if you as a listener can go and even can they buy old issues? Do you have old issues around anywhere? Do that. And then when you're done with it, donate it to your local library. They would love to have it. Even if they don't want it on the shelf, they'll sell it. And that's how you can kind of keep this creative momentum going and help some creative programs that are producing the brilliant artistic talent of the future. Who will
thank
one day
so
as yeah, well, I really enjoyed it. And thanks for reaching out. And I can't wait to see what the 2025 SawPalm looks like.
Thanks, Kathy. It's great to see
you. Thank you. It's good to see you, too. It's been a while. We'll have to have you on the podcast again. Before we go, Rick and I always want to thank our active supporters, which makes it sound like you're out running a marathon, but you're not. All you have to do to be an active supporter is sign up on our website, go to buzzsprout.floridaspectacular.com, click support, choose how much money you want to send us every month, and that's it. Bing, bang, boom, Bob's your uncle, and you're done. So thank you to Bill Grable, Stephanie Hewley, Brad Sager, Brian Woodall, Bet's Boys Adventure, Elise Smith, Carol Miller, Leslie Hallweg, Davita Breyer, Natalie Zachrick, Angela Connolly, John Bowne, and Ryan Worthington. What you do makes what we do possible. Thank you for supporting us. And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time on the Florida Spectacular.
Bye.